everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. You're on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, a very long needed conversation. Today's conversation is going to be about irritability, nastiness, disregard, and all that other stuff that comes with it. It's what happens between people. You know, it's something that's so common. It seems that all relationships seem to start off with a lot of love and good chemistry. And then after a while, they get sloppy. And after a while, they kind of turn into this kind of slight nastiness. Now, not all relationships do it, but you learn different ways. I've known maybe 10 couples, 5 couples, who have never had that happen. But with most other people, a thing happens where you treat the other person with a kind of disregard. I met with somebody earlier today who was describing to me how this happened between her and her husband. And she says, you know, there are times I'm around him, I feel totally irritable towards him. And not even irritable, I just don't want to talk to him. I don't want to go near him. I don't want him to touch me. I don't send out any signals. What is that thing? Why do people turn off to each other like that? What happens? Is it the 7-year itch? Is it midlife crisis? Is it all hormonal? These are the questions that we're talking about. And we're talking about this because I believe that we have to step up a little bit. I believe that if most people, and I would say 99% of the people, let themselves go the way nature would design them to go, they would wind up being numb people who exist together at the end. Numb, a little joy, a little niceness. It's something nice about being with somebody when you're old enough and you both have creaky bones and you kind of share the creaky bones. But what's missing is this kind of love and respect. Just something that I certainly want in my life and I will not live without. And something I hope you would want in your life and would not live without. So, of course, we could all do well on our own, you know, we could be ourselves, and of course you could be dominant, and you could dominate somebody into not getting anything from you. I had a good friend the other day who told me he was with somebody who he was dying to be with after a long period of time, and he found himself treating her nastily. He was mean to her, he said mean things. And he asked himself, he said, why would I do that? And you might say he was probably angry, but he wasn't. He wasn't. It wasn't about anger. It was about a kind of thing we do. Today, I want to explore this irritability, this negativity, this thing that happens in relationships that I believe destroys people and destroys children. I believe it also destroys potential great relationships. Just think, imagine a relationship where two people fall into these things and they say, we're going to work it through. And they do it with strength. Just think, I mean, most people who could say, I could quit this, I don't have to put up with it because it's uncomfortable. And other people say, oh no, I'm going to work this through to its end. Now, I know people who are with other people, their mates, and their mates are irritable. I know a man who's got a wife, and the wife is always complaining about him in some way and talking down to him in public. And he has a wonderful time with her once in a while, but most of the time he just swallows it. That's not the kind of relationship I think that I'm looking forward to. We're talking about. So today I want to talk about a number of things. I want to talk about irritability. I want to talk about some of the hormones that are there. I want to talk about why, even in the first place, we have such a thing. Do we have such a thing? Do you think the animals have this with each other? You know, do you think the animals at Sondheim have this disregard? And I hope you know what I'm talking about. It's that time when you're with somebody who you know you care for and love, and you treat them worse than you would treat a dog. You know, you'd pet the dog, but you won't pet them. It's almost like something's going on. Now, we've had proud conversations here about some of the hormones that take place in people. And I want to invite Stephanie Serotonin to join us for this conversation. Hi, Serotonin.
That's a nice name, Serotonin. Yes.
Right? Better name than prolactin.
Right.
Or dopamine. Mm-hmm. Stephanie, let's talk about these hormones and how they work. When you're in love, oxytocin, right? Bonded. Nice hormone, feeling, chemical, you feel connected to each other. You're nice to each other, you're sweet to each other, oxytocin, wonderful bonding material. What happens?
Well, in the beginning of the relationship, besides the oxytocin, there's all these exciting experiences and feelings. So that's the dopamine, which we all know. We talk about that a lot.
Okay, we may talk about it a lot, but the audience listening may not know about it a lot. So dopamine is one of the neurotransmitters that feel really good. Dopamine is the reason people take cocaine. They take cocaine because it triggers dopamine. It makes you feel this kind of high, alert feeling. So we did a program on the dopaminergic mind, and it's about people who live on dopamine. Dopamine is nice feeling. But, you know, it's got its consequences. It also has a lot of tension that goes with it, and so on and so forth.
Well, in every kind of natural law, what goes up comes down. And that's part of the problem, I think, with dopamine. When it's high in relation to some other hormones, the other ones are low. And one of those is prolactin. And if we're talking about irritability and distancing and wanting to run away from that partner, prolactin is what's involved with that, and that's exactly inversely related to dopamine, meaning when that dopamine is up, the prolactin is low, and when the dopamine comes down, the prolactin increases.
So you're saying that it's like if you have a high dopamine and then you let it slide, you become prolactic, and when you become prolactic, what happens? What do you feel?
I think you become very irritable. That's one thing besides distancing.
Towards everybody?
Well, I mean, when people, let's use the example of cocaine. When they use that cocaine, the next day they are very irritable.
But cocaine is not related to prolactin. Cocaine is related to dopamine.
But the dopamine got blasted and then it comes down. So I'm not the physiologist or the chemist, but I have to assume that when you blast something and make it go up, then it goes down.
But the people I'm talking about, Stephanie, the prolactic ones, mm-hmm. are only that way with the people who are closest to them.
Yeah.
And when that's my question.
Right.
So if you're that close, now we know the following. We know that when a person has, for example, many people have connected to orgasm during sex. If a man has an orgasm, following that, he has a prolactic rush. And we always wondered why the man turns away from the woman after he has sex, or why he wants to go eat or watch TV. That's prolactin working. So here it is, and along with this, you know, this sexual release, he's also got dopamine running there. So what we're saying is it may be with the very same person you love, but if you have prolactin, it's selective. You only hurt the ones you love. It doesn't sound like it's general. I'm walking around today and I'm prolactic to anybody, because I know prolactic people or people who are that way. They're still kind to the doorman. They're still kind to everybody else. They'll still pet the dog. But when it comes to their lover, he's like dirt.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we're trying to explore.
Yeah, that's what we want to know about.
We'll keep researching and trying to figure out why in families, with your children, with your loved ones, with anyone that's familiar and that you're always around, seem to be the ones that you get to dump on, so to speak, that they get dumped on, or they get all your kind of irritability. Because I know other people tell me when they're in a family, their kids bark at them, and they bark at their kids, and they have different kind of problems and arguments, and then they get reports that their kids are beautiful at school. There's no problem. The kids behave, and everybody's appropriate wherever they go off to work. But come back to the family, it's almost like there's this kind of chemistry that takes place when people are near each other all the time.
Well, just let's think. It's a little confusing when you go to kids, but when you go to the adults, think about the parents who are irritable with their kids. You know, the parents, and irritability is not the only word I'm talking about, because irritability is a part of it. But when you're in this place I'm talking about, it's like muerta. You know, it's like you're dead. You walk in a room, you see the person, whereas you used to walk in the room and see the person and kiss them on the cheek and greet them in a nice kind of way. You walk in the room, hi, how are you? And that's all there is to it. That is, to me, pathology. That's the illness right there. When that happens, that person who was a loving person is treating the other person with disrespect, unkindness, and the other person has no idea what's going on. Hey, yesterday we were wonderful. We had a wonderful time. Today you walk in here and I don't even exist. And this happens in so many relationships. Now, I am saying that this is something that I have done in my own life. I have treated people this way without even knowing it. As I look back on it, I say to myself, how do I do that? How does that happen with people I care about? I think there is something that goes on here, and I don't think it's a natural phenomena. I think it's an abnormal phenomena, and I think it's a phenomena that indicates a kind of pathology, possibly an underlying depression. Very possibly, but we're not sure. We want to research it. We want to learn about it. Just looking at one aspect of it, and we're talking about specifically how you treat your lover. You know what I mean? How you treat the person you love. And I'm sure if I put out the phones and I would say to the people there, you know, you got a husband or a mate who treats you badly from time to time, who's mean to you for no reason, or you're mean to them for no reason. Now, one of the things you could do is you could always make up a reason, but we learned this very beautiful thing yesterday with Sherry Siegel about filling in. She said, it's very, very interesting. She said, when you get this irritability, when it happens first, and then your mind searches for reasons to have the irritability, and it finds things to blame. So she said, or we said, the irritability comes first. It's almost chemical. The secondary thing is you begin to blame people. And you could see it. Well, you know, it's because you were wearing the wrong perfume, because you didn't do this, because you. And suddenly you're doing exactly what the chemistry commands. It says there is a certain tension. There's a certain nervousness. The target has got to be somebody else, and you just can't live with it on the inside of you. Now, brave people I know, courageous people who have seen themselves be this way, hate themselves for being this way. I can tell you, I've done it. I have talked to people on phones, and when I've gotten off the phones, I said to myself, where was I? It is not something I ever want to nurture. I want to nurture the opposite. I want to be able to be in control of the part of me that may have a tendency to do that. And I think if you get two people who are a couple or lovers or even parents, if they swear to themselves, I'm not going to bring this home. It's like the story of the man who comes home and he comes to his house and he always takes his hat and coat and puts it outside the house on a peg. And then they ask him, why do you always put your hat and coat outside as opposed to putting it in the house? And he says, because when I come home, I don't want to bring anything from the outside into this home. I just want to be here. It's a brave thing we do, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with Stephanie Dombra talking about the positive mind. So we're talking about some hormonal foundation here. You know, we're learning more and more about our neurochemistry. Stephanie, I got another question for you. One of the other things that I think is a hallmark of this kind of disregard, I wish I had a word for it, this kind of self, you know, that feels turned off to the other person completely, is that there's also with it an absence of compassion. What I've seen is people like this, when one person suddenly gets sick, the other person doesn't feel anything. If the person hurts themselves, they say, oh, look, he hurt himself. It's that kind of turnoff. So it reminds me of the absence of compassion. And I say, wouldn't that be interesting to think of that all of this is the absence of compassion? Because compassion is the ingredient of love. Compassion. I see who you are. I walk in your shoes. You know, I know you. So is all this other stuff the absence of compassion? And the only reason I mention it is because you and I know about something related to compassion and testosterone, right?
I think there's a direct inverse relationship, right? The more that you have testosterone, the less compassion you have.
And why is that?
Well, I think it's kind
Remember,
of designed.
Remember, nature was designed that way. And why would it be designed that way?
You have to be able to kill the beast. You have to be able to get out there and fight whatever is going on that requires you to destroy something, so to speak, for food or an enemy. And so you need to be able to turn off that part of the brain. I'm sure there's things about this in the brain, wherever that compassion lights up. Maybe it turns off directly when you have an angry state or an irritable state. Maybe.
Or not even irritable. Now imagine if you're a hunter, if you're a tiger, and you're out there hunting, and you get into your testosteronic state, you could be a female tiger who becomes testosteronic, right?
Yeah, the hyenas, the female hyena, right? We came across that once when we were doing research.
And they become the savage one. They are now the hunter. But when they're the hunter, they're not angry.
That's right.
And they're not mean.
We can't say angry.
They are there to kill, to get food. But during that time, they cannot feel compassion. They can't feel caring about the person or the thing they're killing. It's time to eat. You know, I'm sure if a tiger runs across a dead tiger, he eats the dead tiger. I'm sure they do. It's meat. You know, it's not, oh, poor Sam. You know, I feel bad. Sam's gone. Right? No, it's time to eat the tiger. So now what that leads us to is the following. Is this disregard feeling, this turnoff to your lover, is it the result not only of prolactin, but does it include testosterone? Well, what an interesting thing. Because if testosterone is elevated at any given time, it would cut down on compassion, and that would lead you to feeling less compassion for the person who you care about the most. Hey, how are you? You don't even say, how are you? You don't even ask. You don't care, really. And that's the way it feels. Well, if that's true, if it's true that we have a combination of prolactin and testosterone, now we have something very interesting happening. Because let's talk about menopause. Right? One of the characteristics of menopause is irritability. Right? It's talked about as irritability as one of the things that happen, that hormonal changes take place. And one of the things that happen both, I think, premenstrually and during menopause, are irritability is a symptom of it. And there's a change in the menopause. What's the primary changes that take place? Drop in estrogen.
Drop in all the hormones, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, but that drop is very much estrogen.
And when the estrogen-testosterone balance gets affected, what I believe is if you could have testosterone go from 5 to 1, and you could have estrogen go from 5 to 1, but there's always this balance of how much estrogen there is to how much testosterone there is. When the balance goes off, I think testosterone takes over, because, you know, all the people I've ever seen who are that irritable self, they're men. They're masculine. It never seems very feminine. It seems masculine. The aggression is masculine. The meanness is masculine. The lack of compassion is masculine. Now, I'm not saying like men or like women. I'm saying masculine versus, you know, with high testosterone and high all the other things that go along with it. So is what's happening during that time, is the woman who is doing this with her man turning into a man, or is the man who's doing it with his woman turning into a man, turning into that testosteronic male? Well, you know, if you look at it, it's true. It's the way I see it. The person is certainly not sexy. The person certainly is not very appealing, except to some people. Now we have to shift the conversation. Because there are a whole bunch of people in the world who like people who are nasty. There are women who go out with men who are very mean to them. And there are women who go out with men who are very mean to them. And there must be something appealing about it. There's something appealing about being, and they call this dominant-submissive relationships. In a dominant-submissive relationship, the dominant male or dominant female will treat the submissive one like dirt. The submissive one likes it. They get off on it somehow. It means something to them. What does it mean to them? From my understanding, it makes you little. It makes you a child. It makes you feel like you're a small person and you're not an adult and you lose all sense of responsibility. You don't have to fight being a grown-up. So I think people who don't like to be grown-up get related to people who are over-dominant. Because the over-dominant person takes away all of your stuff, all the stuff that you would do to handle the world. You know, dominant male, he handles the checking account, he does the shopping, he does everything. Right? And the woman just, you know, she just carries the hod. The hod is the secret word. Carries the hod is, you know what the hod is? The hod is a thing that cement makers use to haul cement. So it's a thing that's on a long stick. It carries the cement so that when you're a bricklayer, you gotta go into your hod. Well, you have your woman hold your hod because that's all that she's good for because you're gonna lay the bricks. Or vice versa. A woman does that with her men. We used to watch, when I was a kid, we used to watch some of the shopping malls. And we would find in the winter, the men would be carrying their women's coats. And we would make bets on how many men were hat racks. And we would say, look, you're a hat rack. We would say it to each other. We would look as men, as boys, we would look at how many guys wound up just being hat trees or clothing trees or closets because they're carrying everybody's clothing and kind of moving along. So is there an opportunity here for us to learn something about this by looking at the masculine exchange of this existence? Gee, at that time, you don't even look like a man looks like a mean man. A woman looks like a mean man. The feminine part disappears to that mate, not necessarily to everybody else. So you'll see, sex would be like the least interesting thing in the world at the moment. You turn off. And I'm willing to bet that what we see here is not only prolactin, but we're seeing testosterone at force, even though it may not be physically present. Somehow the absence of the estrogen or the absence of the estrogen is in its balance. And I don't understand enough. Do you have anywhere, Stephanie, that you would speculate in here that might help with this? Do you think we got to dig some more research into testosterone and the lack of compassion?
So far, I haven't found anything yet, and I've dug. So.
You've dug, yeah. So one of the good books that helped describe this to people, right, which we've talked about, if people wanted to learn more about the effect of the bonding and the feeling of bonding, who would you recommend if people were to grab a book?
To understand about love and chemistry?
Yes.
Well, Helen Fisher, Why We Love, that's a good one.
Why We Love by Helen Fisher.
And there's another one. I think she wrote something about the chemistry of love.
It's good stuff, boy, because it's good to understand. Now, we're not done with this yet because we've just scratched the surface. We are invested in love. Stephanie and I care about you being able to love because this show is called The Positive Mind. And what's that about? It's about love. It's about being able to love. You could, of course, be a positive mind and be so strong and so firm that all you do is go around the world being positive and throwing out little phrases every now and then. But are you kind? Are you caring? And are you kind to the people you're close to? So part of what we're talking about is that. Now, not only lovers, but I also find that there are certain stages of vulnerability that also lead to a similar kind of irritability. And that would make sense according to nature. Because according to nature, you know, if you're a lion who's lying around, or if you're a tiger or a monkey laying around, and you're wounded and you can't really function well, what do you do when somebody comes near you? You growl. Rawr, get away. Because you don't feel like you have all your defenses. You want to warn people away. The irritable condition is a warning signal. You know, stay away from mom. She's not in a good mood, right? That bad mood is a way of saying I'm vulnerable inside. I don't have my tools. If you're tired, if you're worn out, if you're stressed out, being irritable is a way of keeping people away. And that's one of the things that I think we were given as a natural defense. Of course, I don't want to be that way. I don't want to be irritable just to keep people away, but I act it. Sometimes I'll be doing something and I'll be nervous, and I'll just act so nervous that I just tell people, get away from me, get away from me, indirectly or directly. I think when you get old, as you age, and you feel your bones creaking and you feel more vulnerable, you tend to get a little more nasty. I think you get grumpy. You know the expression grumpy? Grumpy is, I'm being nasty, but I can't say it because nobody wants to hear it. So I say it under my breath. You know? It's like crotchety, right? Nasty. I think sick people also tend, people who are threatened physically, also tend to have this kind of defense, but it becomes more generalized. We did some research on irritability itself, and would you believe the question became, how many physical conditions are there that have irritability as one of its symptoms? And the number was, it was just unbelievable, 744 illnesses that list irritability as one of the symptoms. If you started, you'd have to go through the alphabet, starting at A, winding up at Z. There are so many things that have irritability as a symptom that sometimes you have to wonder, if my mate has suddenly become irritable, is there an illness? Is there a physical illness? Do we report irritability to our doctors? Do we go to our physicians and say, and I'm irritable? Probably not. But in 744 different conditions, it's prominent. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. Diabetes, right? Diabetes, an onset of diabetes. The Diabetes Foundation notes that those who suffer from type 1 diabetes may experience irritability and mood changes along with the first primary symptoms. The first thing you know about it is that. We also know people who, when they're losing sugar, when they have a sugar drop, when they get tired, right, they become that way. You ever seen anybody? I've been related to people who they say, I've got to eat. Now, me, I don't care. If I say I have to eat, I can wait 2 hours before I eat. But there are some people who, when they have the signal, I have to eat, they have to eat. They have to go get something right away because their sugar is dropping. And during that time, nastiness, meanness, irritability, nothing pleases them. It's almost like you got to rush them off to find them what they need. Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, trying to get you to understand this phenomenon of turning off and why couples turn off. Is it true that after 6.5 years, every couple should break up? Is it true, as some suggest in their research? Or if you don't break up, maybe you just turn off to your mate and you live a life of deadness with each other, you know, with occasional good times. I don't know. We're trying to change it. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music, and we will continue with this theme.
You're mean to me. Why must you be mean to me? Gee, honey, it seems to me You love to see me crying. I don't know why I stay home each night when you say your phone. You don't and I'm left alone, singing the blues and sighing. You treat me coldly each day of the year. You always scold me whenever somebody is near. Dear, it must be great fun to be mean to me. You shouldn't, for can't you see what you mean?
Paradise, with a beautiful version of Mean to Me, Kate Paradise, with honor to Billie Holiday, who would sing that song. But if she sang that song, believe me, I'd wind up crying, because she had it from that way back when she was really talking about herself and the way things are. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about being mean to each other without being really mean. But you ignore the other, take them for granted. It's almost like their smell bothers you. And I'm not saying if they have... It's like, you know, sometimes you love the way a person looks and smells, and then at other times you don't want to say anything, or you don't even notice it. Or you notice the bad things. Sometimes you notice the good things, sometimes you notice the bad things. Now, of course, it may be that in general you're irritable, but the one we are talking about and focusing on is the one that happens in couples' relationships where People have to adjust at some point. When one person turns into this kind of, you're dead to me, you know, we're in this relationship, we're married, let's say, we have children. Yes, you come home at night, I barely notice you when you come home, I tell you about the things we have to do with the kids. And the next thing that goes is sex, right? Because once you get that turn off, it becomes mutual. And then you have a non-sexual loving relationship, supposedly. That's another kind of turn off. Then you have a tolerable relationship where you have a good time only when you go away. You have to go away to have a good time. And then, so one out of 50 times, you have a great time. And the rest of the time, nothing. It's kind of, blech. Well, what do you do about it? I say, you look at it, you challenge it. You say, hey, what about this? What about me and this thing? What do I owe this other person after all these years? How do I want to make it work? Very few people will challenge it. Very few people are brave enough. Everybody wants to take the road of least resistance, which is lead or sweep it under the rug. Leave or sweep it under the rug. Sweep it under the rug and don't challenge it. Don't take it on. But you know, irritability, if you're just irritable in general, that should be paid attention to. If an irritability is new and it persists for more than a week and it's adversely affecting your job performance, your relationship with friends, if you feel under constant pressure at home or work, constant, and if you also have headaches, which go with this, tend to get headaches, you're having a symptom that could be more than just your thick skin that you used to have wearing thin. Occasional irritability is a normal part of being human. Adolescents, for example, go through periods of irritability. One moment they're very sour and nasty, and 10 minutes later they're fine. Parents shouldn't be overly concerned about that because adolescents are like tropical weather. They change from moment to moment. But irritability can also go hand in hand with almost any illness. So one of the things you want to try to find is to identify the cause of the irritability. And I tell you, friends, people make a lot of mistakes about this because they make it up. You make it up from your irritability. If somebody comes to see me, it is very easy for me to analyze their lives and find something wrong. Well, it's obvious that the reason you're irritable is because you're not getting enough vitamin B. Or it's obvious the reason you're irritable is because you're living under electrical wires that are outside your house. Or obvious you're irritable because you're drinking that kind of water. Or you're not getting enough exercise. Or you're this. We can make up anything we want. I'm not sure that's the way to tackle it. The way to tackle it is to try to find the way in and underneath it. That's what great therapy does. Great psychotherapy takes that person and steps them through that irritability, that nastiness. But the trouble is when you're with your therapist, you're not that way. When you're with your therapist, you're feeling safe and fine. You don't feel that way. So then the therapist has to do couples therapy. And in couples therapy, you see it. I do couples therapy. It's amazing to see the kind of way people turn towards each other and against each other. I was with a couple the other day who had never hugged each other. It was really, they did once or twice, but never had a prolonged hug. So I had them hug each other in front of me. 10 minutes they hugged, like they had found home. They needed somebody on the outside. Mood swings and irritability are closely related. We use mood swing to describe a reaction that isn't appropriate to what triggered it. Irritability to most of us means an angry or impatient reaction to something that happens. What causes mood swings, irritability? Well, okay. Women have been blamed for years because women's hormones, estrogen, seems to be a big culprit here. Back to you, Stephanie. I've got to ask you about this. Right? The role of estrogen, right? The role of estrogen that it plays, I mean, what happens as it drops away? Why do women have this symptom more than men?
Well, I think for sure estrogen and serotonin are underneath these issues of irritability. So estrogen is related to serotonin production in a very limited way. If you have increased estrogen, you have increased serotonin. It helps the serotonin production.
And serotonin is good.
Well, that it's good for our mood. It does, you know, low serotonin, so to speak, is related to irritability.
And if you have too much serotonin, you're a mushpot.
Well, I don't know about that.
You know, I mean, what happens with too much? Who has ever got too much serotonin? There must be this. Oh, there is a symptom. There is. Remember that one where the person was taking the chemicals, she had the migraines, and she had serotonin.
Serotonergic syndrome.
No, serotonergic syndrome, yeah, where she almost died from it.
Okay, so clearly there's a danger in too much, but that's usually
chemically.
Because there's chemical things going in, not naturally.
Yeah, chemical things going in, not you're producing your own serotonin. Right, okay.
So
too much sex.
No.
Well, there's chemical things going in. Okay, go ahead.
So I think that the problem is for estrogen, when it drops, serotonin drops, and we get like a double whammy, so to speak.
What do you mean?
We get more irritable.
Irritable?
So, there is that piece for women, too.
Serotonin drops, you get the feeling of depression. It's like falling off a cliff. As it drops, as it begins to drop, you feel yourself sinking, sinking, sinking. One of the things about irritability is you keep your head above water. It's like thrashing when you fall in the water, you know what I mean? So this irritability is a way of keeping yourself up from the depression. Because without serotonin, as serotonin drops, you get depressed, which is one of the reasons they treat depression by giving you things that raise your serotonin. Because that's the slide. So as your serotonin drops, you're looking at an abyss down there. And irritability is what saves you from the abyss. It's like you're striking out, grabbing at a wall. If you have a fight, because what will happen if you have irritability? And if you have an argument with somebody, it raises the cortisol. And cortisol is one of the solutions for low serotonin. I like that. Serotonin. So not, and I don't want to confuse you with this, my friends, but cortisol, we remember, is a neurotransmitter that when it's there in abundance, it feels really good, and it's activated when you get angry, especially when you're in fights, when you have an agitated state. Cortisol is there. Cortisol is a substitute for serotonin, but a very bad one, because what it does is it disappears quickly, you know? And what happens when it disappears? Prolactin comes up, and the serotonin's not there. And there you are. And maybe, Stephanie, maybe the prolactin is just dealing with that loss.
Yeah, it's fascinating to try to understand all the relationships between all of those things.
Yeah.
And you can only imagine that if one goes off, the other might either get a higher or lower. Who knows?
Sure. And that may be the purpose of the prolactin. To keep the loss of serotonin from bringing you into depression or the overuse of, or to the dopamine. It may just give you the middle space, the thing that spaces you, that separates you from people. This is Armando Mill with Stephanie Dombra. We're exploring this feeling of deadness that takes place between people, or inconsideration or non-compassion or nasty. It takes place between people. We're kind of structuring it with irritability. We were talking about a moment. Women. Now we go talk about women, and they always get the bad rap because women's hormones move faster than men's. Does serotonin move differently in women than men?
Well, we're more susceptible to it dropping. I think that's the theory. Somehow it drops more easily, and we can't replenish it as naturally as a man.
It's either we can't replenish it, you think, or is it that men don't lose it? We don't know, right? Because I heard that in the muscle tone, you tend to hold it, right? And you lose it. Now, what happens as women get thinner and thinner and thinner?
Well, they lose estrogen. If you don't have enough fat stores in your body, then estrogen also drops. That's what happens with, you know, serious athletes. So they stop menstruating if you're that thin. And that's one of the reasons why when women go into menopause, they can't understand, why am I retaining weight? But it's the body's design to say, hey, let's keep some fat around because we're going to lose the estrogen once the ovaries stop producing it. So it's very important to have a certain amount of fat on the body to produce estrogen.
Thank God. Armando Mill here with Stephanie Dombra. All right, so now we're at this place where women who go through menopause, can you explain the menopausal reaction of irritability?
I'm going to generalize and say
sure.
Once that estrogen starts to decrease and the serotonin also decreases because it's just, I think, in general, aging causes a decrease in neurotransmitter production. You know, so I think estrogen and serotonin, those things drop, plus testosterone, which gives us energy both in males and females, you tend to get irritable. And then you're not sleeping because the estrogen drops. And we didn't even touch on the fact that when people don't sleep a lot, they get very irritable. So that adds to that irritability in a woman when she's struggling to try to sleep at night, because that whole estrogen-progesterone relationship to sleeping well, it's very established.
Gets very shaken by menopause?
Yes, the drops in
and the hot flashes in the middle
absolutely.
Of the night?
Absolutely.
Right, waking up and feeling that? If you're having hot flashes or insomnia, you're very fatigued. And it can also be sudden shifts in hormonal balance. Perimenopause starts when?
It's probably in the early to late 40s for most women. Mm-hmm. It could last several years until the very last period. And it's a whole year sometimes you have to wait to call it menopause, where you don't menstruate a whole year. Then you go into menopause.
So what are we going to do about this, my friends? Thank you, Stephanie. What are we going to do about it? You know, just one other thing I want to mention, which is addictions. Individuals who are addicted to alcohol, street drugs, prescription drugs, or even smoking can experience high levels of irritability as they encounter the detox, or even if they're on the drugs. Because there are certain chemicals that do a thing. We have a thing called reserpine, which helps us keep our balance. And the reserpine uptake inhibitors very often are some of the drugs that we take. So when reserpine is not taken up, you could also be irritable. So that's why you see people who take prescription drugs very often become irritable, because the reserpine is diminished as well. So after immediate physical withdrawal symptoms, that's another story. You know, when you're craving things. But all of the addictions will lead to kind of, in one way or another, intermittent nastiness. But when you go through the withdrawal, prolonged nastiness. Anybody who's ever stopped smoking. I remember one case of a man who stopped smoking. He became so nasty, his doctor said, please go back to smoking. Of course, that's because the doctors learned enough.
One thing that's really important about addiction is that when people, and we were talking about addictions the other day, but when people are using coffee, alcohol, drugs, anything, after a while, they're actually not getting that high. They're just going to normal to feel like the agitation they're trying to take away. So it's almost as if the highs and the great feelings are gone. You just need that substance to get to a normal, less irritable feeling. Mm. So once you stop it, you really drop to all that irritability. So you use to feel normal.
So what can you do about this? Thank you, Stephanie. What can you do about this? And the answer to that is we don't know. But we're trying to know, and we're trying to learn, and you have to keep yourself curious about it. One of the things I could say the following I believe to be true. Number one, don't hide it. Instead of trying to hide your feelings, warn people around you, especially the person you love, that you're not feeling connected at the moment. And the minute you say it, if you don't hide it, you actually feel closer. Because the very nature of saying it brings you closer. See, people who are invested in their own distance, they don't say it. They keep it secret. They have little secrets. They think they're keeping secrets. And all they know is the partner is saying, oh, there she goes again. There he goes again. Don't hide it. If you're feeling grumpy, people get into trouble when they don't acknowledge their feelings to others. Very often they don't want to acknowledge it because they don't want to see it themselves. If you're lucky, you have a mate who says, what's wrong with you today? You're back in that spot. And you wake up to your mate saying it to you. And you say, oh, I didn't know I was there. Because sometimes you don't know you're there. But try not to hide it. Try to be aware of it. And you'll absolutely... If you have one of those days, say, I just wanted to let you know that I'm not doing well today. I just want to let you know, and touch the other person when you say it. It'll change your own chemistry. Even though it seems like the last thing in the world you want to do, if you're going to say to your mate, hey, I'm not going to be able to love you right now, but I want you to remember I know that. And it's a slight touch. It could make all the difference in the world. Whenever you don't do that, you're invested in the irritation. Then you're interested. Then you're invested in the pathology. So, you know, it's like unconsciously, I'm sure. But that's one. Second is take a pause. Try doing a task that'll distract you from what's irritating you. Try to do something that's a distraction from that feeling. Something that'll be a kind, nice thing for you. Take a walk. You know, write a letter. Water the lawn. Try to get quiet. Do a systems check. Now, this is about confronting someone, because irritability, like we said, once you get this irritability, your brain fishes for what's wrong, and it will always find something that's wrong. Oh, you know, I don't like the way you are this. I don't like this. I don't like what you said. I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like the way you talk to me. You could find millions of things. Before you confront someone, if you have this tendency, make sure you're under control. Hold back. Hold back. Remember, the irritability is inside you. It's not caused by the other person. I seem to be reacting to is the best you could say. But if you believe it's their fault, you're trapped. You're caught in that mood. Now, remember, I said one more thing is, I think for some people, when they get in that mood, they feel more powerful. And I think it's because, especially for women, they become men. And they get this masculine kind of thing. And I think that's why they invest in it. I think they stay invested in the mood because it makes them feel more powerful for some reason. I understand. Now, set a time. If someone does irritate you and you sense you'll explode after a little while, try to set a time for yourself. You've got to take yourself in a room and, if you can, make yourself cry. You would be amazed how tears take away the whole mood. But people who are reluctant to cry very often. Yes, and that's right, tears release prolactin. You know, so if you know anybody who's being unkind, make them cry. And then think about the positive, my friends. Think about the days, think about the fact that somewhere down there, there is a person inside you. There's a child who wants to be loved and is with somebody who is willing to love it. And be kind to yourself. Just say to yourself over and over again, I'm going to get through this, and I'm going to get through this better, and I'm not going to wind up like my parents or like my sisters or my brothers who have these kind of empty relationships. I want to have something real. Reach down for it. Go for it. It's all there. Hey, I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Leave me send me an email about today's program, will you? I'd like to hear from you. And send it to armand@thepositivemind.com. I'd love to get your feedback. And you got no reason to show. Don't let it go. It's 3 a.m. and you've told your whole life story to a telephone, and the radio's the only thing to let you know you're not alone. Oh, no. Just have a little faith.
you know the flowers gonna bloom. And when the hard times come, you know the teacher's in the room. And when the sun comes up, you know that I'll be there for you. Don't let it go. Oh no. Just have a little faith.
Bueno, this is Jennifer Sanchez. I urge
you. Oh, no. Just have a little faith in me. I'll have a little faith in you. So have a little faith in me. Don't let it go. Don't let it go. Don't let it go. Don't. Be strong for me, I'll be strong for you. Just be strong for me, I'll be strong for you. Just be strong for me. Don't let it go. Don't.